A number of years ago, an old friend of mine, a college friend who I have gone through life with, and I were back in Seattle. We seemed to go through life, go living on other parts of the country, and then re-intersecting in one place or another. And we had re-intersected, if that's a word, here in this area several years ago, and we went hiking. He took me hiking, and it was just Cougar Mountain or whatever that is, but I hadn't been there for a while, and he had been making the journey up and down each day, making a way through his own life at that time, and needed that discipline. And we set off together, and I grew up hiking, and so I charged off up the hill, and he said, wait just a minute. He said, you know, I've been in Africa for a while, and I learned something from the people there. I was able to hike Kilimanjaro because they taught me how to go slowly. And if you simply move up the mountain slowly, you will have your breath. You will be able to see all around you. You'll enjoy the wonder of the world. And you will be able to arrive at the top unwearied, unfainting. The whole path will be a joy. But if you keep going like you're going, you're going to be done here in just a few minutes. And that's an emblem for life, is it not? In so many ways. Jesus invites people, Jesus invites you and me onto a path of life, onto a path of life. Our collect today prays, set us free. Its first words, set us free, set us free. The prayer that frames our liturgy today in the opening scenes of Jesus' ministry, as Mark tells the story, Jesus sets out his purpose. His purpose, to reveal the way, the path, the journey to what he would call the kingdom of God. We might have other language for it. Arriving at ourselves fully alive, known as people who are one, whole, connected to the divine life and know our own selves. We know the divine within, we know the divine without. Arriving at that place where all is one, where we are whole, Jesus invites us on to that journey. And Mark lays out his purpose in the first words of his gospel. And Mark puts the words in Jesus, his own purpose for this travel, for this work, for his mission. It is to go into the neighboring towns, Jesus says, that I might proclaim the message there also. That's what we hear of Jesus' purpose in our gospel today. That I might proclaim the message there also. And the funny thing about that saying is that Jesus, in the words that precede it, in the experience that precedes it, doesn't say anything at all until the end, saying, I must proclaim the message there also. It's funny that in the preceding parts of our gospel today, Jesus doesn't say anything, but his message is delivered in action. His message is delivered in action. So let's look at Jesus' sermon in action today. He and his followers, Simon and Andrew, James and John, have just gone to Capernaum. They've had their first encounter in the synagogue, and it was rather hair-raising. And so Simon and Andrew offer hospitality to Jesus at their house. Come on over. come on over to our house. Let's crack a beer. And so they go. And immediately, there's a lot of immediately in Mark's gospel. Right away, they tell Jesus that Simon's mother-in-law is down with a fever. Now, given the ancient customs of hospitality, I suspect that sharing this news with Jesus right away wasn't at all about a request for her healing, but rather an excuse for why the food wasn't on the table already. Maybe the boys are going to have to fend for themselves in this instance. Jesus nonetheless sees this an opportunity to heal. And what does he say? Absolutely nothing. What does he do? He walks over to Simon's mother-in-law, and he takes her by the hand and he lifts her up. Let's try this. You see how it is? If you think about it, if Jesus took her by the hand and lifted her up, he probably would have broke her wrist or torn ligaments in her arm as he hoisted her up into the air. But that's not how it happened, is it? He took her by the hand and she got up. Think about that. The act of healing was to invite the mother-in-law back into life, back into the action and the being of whole life. You see, in the ancient world, illness and exclusion, social exclusion, were often tied together in one sense and sensibility. If you were ill, you were disassociated from the community. You were ostracized. You were set apart. If you were well, you were part of the functioning of things. What Jesus does is invite Simon's mother-in-law back into the game. Just taking her hand is all it took. A suggestion, an inspiration. She was able to find her feet. Now, I know a lot of people make play by the point that as soon as they got Mama up on her feet, they chained her to the stove again. But because the next thing is that she began to serve them. But I think that that's looking from our modern eyes. I would suggest rather that the invitation was for her to step back into her full life. She's back in the game, functioning in the way that her social DNA would have it, as a gracious host to a guest. Illness and inability disabled a person from the land of liberty in which we're invited, and Jesus invited us to be free. Illness and inability disabled people in that time from the land of liberty. And in a pre-psychological age, maladies with no apparent physical etiology or evidence lived in the realm beyond knowing and owed to powers beyond our knowing, their knowing, powers that were called demons, spirits. Such illnesses disabled people from living their own full lives. And what's curious about those possessed of demons in the text, and there are many, is that they resist Jesus. In most of the attempts of healing of people, there is very little resistance. But when it comes to those possessed of demons, they resist Jesus. They know in the text his power in relationship to their power. And in Mark's social world, they are the keepers of things as they are. The demons want things to stay as they are, and they resist the change and the healing, the change that comes from healings. I often wonder if these demons in the text lend the voice of fear to that is resident in the rest of the society. I wonder if Mark uses them in part to speak about the fear that's in every one of us, about everyone in the society, and can put that voice in those who are sort of out there and unknown, living in the powers. When I first went to spend a summer in Guatemala many years ago in my early 20s, the family with whom I lived had experienced some of the very worst of the war years in that country and what it could deliver. Their daughter had been college age and kidnapped and disappeared. They never saw her again. And in the time that I was living with them, that experience was only a couple of years old and was fresh every day. They lived in grief and fear, and yet they still organized themselves and worked in that society for justice. And I got a taste in that time for how very much the daily stress and the burden of worry and grief weighed on my host family's souls and bodies. They would always say, "La presión, the stress is getting to me." And in societies that live under the thumb of war, like in the first century, like the world in which Mark is writing, like the world to which Jesus went, not entirely unlike our own day, in these times, people experience very intensely and physically the burden of social life and political life right in their very flesh. I remember the first day I arrived, I received some lessons about how to navigate in that world. Because in fact, what I was doing was slightly clandestine. I was going to a language school that also taught you from right in the inside of the cracks in the system, taught us what it was really like to live within the burden of terror. And so it couldn't be a public school. So I was told, don't talk to anybody about anything that's political. There are ears everywhere. And I thought that was silly at first. Before you go into the school, look around and be sure that no one is following you. Go around the block if you have to. The message I got right from the beginning was, live under the radar, be vigilant, be attentive. And I realized how much these people lived with on a very daily basis and the stress that came to them by having to live in just that sort of way. And in the very short time that I lived there, I saw very clear evidence of the need to live with that sort of suspicion and how captivating the fear is, how crazy-making really it is, how stressful it is. So no wonder the notion of healing, of true healing, activated a sense that of the demons' fears, their fear of Jesus, of one coming into their world and inviting change, inviting a new way, when keeping things the same was the only thing that was going to keep the terror abated. It was the only way that they were going to be able to keep their heads down. But Jesus walks onto their landscape, into their world, and invites them into life, in an entirely other kind of life, free of that sort of fear. And it's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. The demons let us know that. Jesus' message of healing is really much more than cure, which is a modern notion of medicine. We might wonder if in a land where disease is social, if Jesus' invitation to join the living may have in fact had itself a curative impact. I bet it did. But make no mistake, the action of Jesus as he begins his ministry is to bring all the barriers down. He invites people on the path to full, emancipated, vital, and whole life. His message is life lived under the reign of God, with the reign of God. We've heard the line from St. Irenaeus so many times, the glory of God is a human being fully alive. The glory of God is a human being fully alive. And that's the path to which Jesus invited his followers and stretches out a hand across the centuries to you and to me. That's the healing journey for all of us. The terror struck, the joy-filled, I can't believe my ears, wild journey on the road to life. We are on the journey right now, and it's a place where we are right now to discover the presence and power of God. Right now on this part of the journey, on this very step, in fact, the part of the turf that is right under your foot, God is alive and well and welcoming you to that full and abundant life right where it is. You don't have to be a mile down the road to get it, but it's right now. In our mind's eye, we envision Jesus inviting these first fisher folk to follow him. And that invitation is extended to you and to me. We have the message, which is a hand outstretched, inviting us, you and me, onto the path of life. He takes our hand and just with a suggestion, enlists us in the journey. We can run and get out of breath. We can flex our muscle and twirl around and get tired. Or we can take one step at a time and enjoy the beauty of the moment. See the deep possibility of healing for our lives right where we are, and then take the next step and arrive at the end unwearied, having enjoyed the whole hike. The invitation is yours.